Thanks so much for tuning in to the Moonee Ponds Baptist Church podcast. Here we upload our weekly teachings that happen every Sunday at our 10 a.m. service. If we can help you in any way, feel free to reach out to us and check out our website at mpbc.org.au.
Oh, good morning, friends. Lovely to be here. Well, the Bible readings this morning are taken from the New International Version. This one I've had for 30 years, but I'm reading from the notes that I've been given. And we're reading from Luke chapter 10, verses 25 to 37, usually known as the parable of the Good Samaritan. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he travelled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn and took care of him. The next day he took 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. 'Look after him,' he said, 'and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have.' Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" The expert in the law replied, "The one who gave, the one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." And from another portion, 1 John 3, 17 and 18, again from the NIV. "If anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need, but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? Dear children, let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and in truth." Amen.
Thank you, Eugene. Morning again. As you can see, we're doing things a bit differently. You know what this means, go, everybody. Whip out your phones. There's a QR code. You can go to menti.com and use that code at the top if you need. So we're going to do things a little bit differently today. There's going to be, throughout this sermon, there's going to be some questions that pop up, and everything is anonymous that you type. And I'd like to welcome you to reflect and to also participate. So maybe we can see where we're all sitting, where we're all at, and just share and encourage one another throughout this sermon. If you haven't met me before, my name is Nathan. I'm the Youth and Young Adults Pastor here. And let's dig into it. So back in 2017, Beck and I had just got the keys to our first house we were renting in Glenroy. As many of you would be aware, when it comes to moving house, you know, there's a lot that goes into it, right? So, you know, packing boxes, you know, moving boxes, packing more boxes, moving more boxes, moving furniture, organizing a moving truck. It's a really stressful time. Around the same time, a good friend of mine had just become friends with just some guy he met at a club, literally. So now this new guy, his name's Kagan, I barely knew him. I met him once or twice, but hadn't properly got to know him. But he calls me up, and he says, I hear you're moving. Let me know when you're moving, and I'll be there with you. I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll send you a message, right? But in my head, I'm thinking, there's no chance he's going to show up, right? Like, it's a super kind thing to offer. But you're probably just, you know, virtue signaling. But I figure, why not, right? So I sent him the details of where we were moving and the date it was happening. So moving day comes around. Beck and I have everything ready to go in boxes in her shoebox apartment. And guess who's there? It's Kagan. And he's brought along a couple of his mates too. So now this was an absolute like stinker of a day. It was like 35 degrees in the peak of summer. The townhouse we were moving to had like the living space upstairs with this like annoying narrow staircase. You had to get everything around. But still, Kagan showed up, came along with us, no questions asked, and no expectations whatsoever. And that really struck a chord with me, yeah? Like, I really didn't know this guy, or his mates, but he was willing to sacrifice his time and his energy purely out of the goodness of his heart. He and his mates said, I'm with you. And they came alongside us in love. Funnily enough, we're still friends today. But have you ever had an experience like that? Yes, great. Have you ever had someone in your life say, I'm with you during a tough time or challenge? Have you ever been that person to say those words? You see, my friends could have simply met my initial expectations and thrown out their offer to help without any intention of following through. That would have been fine and all, right? But to actually show love to others required them to act, to do something about it. It wasn't just words, but action that showed us love. I want you to pause for a moment. What do you think the opposite of love is? We're going to have a little word cloud here. Feel free to pop in what you think the opposite of love is. Hate. That is probably the first thing that comes to my mind as well. Fear. Good. Excellent. I think hate is probably the most common response to love. Yeet is probably opposite to love too. I think indifference is also one that's, yeah, perfect. That's thrown out there. I think a good working answer is also selfishness. Self-centered, yeah, good. Selfishness, beautiful. So hatred kind of like stems from being selfish, right? Like when we put ourselves at the center of everything and push everyone else to the sidelines, including God and others, that kind of like self-centeredness is what causes all the trouble. It's the root of all evil, the cause of bigotry, injustice, and even wars, right? It's like a cancer that destroys everything in its path. Homes, churches, nations. And if we let it go unchecked, it'll even destroy the very fabric of creation. Selfishness. But, like, love is the cure, right? Love will heal the sin-sick soul. Love can lift us up when, like, the gravity of selfishness will pull us down. Love can bind us together when selfishness will tear us apart. On Channel 9, there's a show at the moment. It's called The Summit. And the premise is like a group of contestants have to reach the top of a mountain, undertaking various tasks along the way. Each contestant has a backpack with a portion of the grand prize of $1 million. So when a contestant stops competing or they get kicked off, they leave the show and they take their money, that money gets taken away from the pool. So, and if the group doesn't reach the summit, all the money no one gets any of the money. So there's betrayal, there's secrets, there's backstabbing. It's basically like Australian Survivor on a mountain. But think about it though, right? The premise of The Summit and Survivor is that you put all these people in a location and the goal of their life is to find life by getting everyone else kicked off. That's like a parable of selfishness, right? Like, because eventually selfishness gets everyone kicked off the island and there's only you left. But love brings us together, right? Love heals the wounds. Love can lift us up. Love is the source of freedom. In reality, our very existence is rooted solely in love. Like, God did not require us, right? Nor the world with all its complexities. Love says, you know, let there be light, let there be Sam, let there be Evan, let there be, you know, Perry, let there be each and every single one of you created out of love. But if we're going to be people of love, we need to make a world with a real possibility of life for all. That's the work of love. And I really believe that that's a big part of why I'm a Christian, or I'm a follower of Jesus, a very flawed one, but still a follower, nonetheless. But I am because I believe Jesus is right, right? Like, the way to life is the way of love. Love the Lord your God. Love your neighbor. While you're at it, love yourself too. That's the key. Have you heard that song by Massive Attack? It's called Teardrop. Like, it's an absolutely beautiful, ethereal song. It's been covered by the likes of, you know, Hayley Williams of Paramore, Jose Gonzalez, Newton Faulkner. The opening lyrics of the song say, like, love, love is a verb. Love is a doing word. Fearless on my breath. Like, love's a doing word, right? And there's a lot of truth to that. If we are to become people of love, we need to become people of action. Like, sometimes I struggle to love others. Maybe some of you can relate to that too. It's easier said than done, right? Like, most of us, like, we smile. We nod at this idea of, you know, being a community of love and being, like, becoming a person of love. But that sounds great, right? Until your roommate, you know, doesn't clean up the dishes, ever. Or someone in your group project, you know, they slack off and they take all the credit for the work you've done. Or when, maybe when someone is driving in front of you, like, 10 kilometers slower than the speed limit. Oh. Or maybe things are just, you know, too much. And you've got this, like, building level of anxiety creeping into your mental health. Maybe your heart was broken and you're not in the space to love others. Whatever it is, sometimes it's easier said than done. I guess God knew we'd have a tough time becoming people of love, because Jesus addressed this when he was speaking to the expert in religious law, who was also struggling with this issue. In our reading in Luke 10, we start off with a religious scholar testing Jesus. Like, that's probably not a great idea, right? Teacher, what should I do to inherit eternal life? Well, some people don't find it hard to love others. Good on ya. Jesus pulls off, like, a classic Jesus move, and he answers the question with another question. See that all the time, right? What did the law of Moses say? How do you read it? What's your interpretation? The religious expert hits back with, like, a quote from Deuteronomy 6. It's like, you must love the God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength, all your mind. And then one from Leviticus 19, boom, boom, love your neighbor as yourself, which is, of course, affirmed by Jesus. And then verse 29, the guy basically, he wanted an excuse for his actions, right? Have you ever felt like that? He asked Jesus, like, who counts as my neighbor, though? But the reason behind this question, he's looking for an easy way out. He's not really interested in what Jesus has to say. He just wants to tick off the religious checklist and be like, yep, I've done my good deed for the week. I'm all good. When it comes to showing love to others, like, I'm guilty of doing that too. Are you? Jesus responds through the telling of his most famous parable, the parable of the Good Samaritan. He says, a Jewish man was traveling from Jerusalem down to Jericho, and he was attacked by bandits. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him up, and left him half dead beside the road. So just for some context, Jerusalem's all up in the hills, and Jericho is down near the Dead Sea, like, way below sea level. It's about 3,700 feet drop between the two, all these crazy sharp turns and everything. And, like, it was a pretty serious road. Like, by the time Jesus is telling the story, it had gotten so bad that it was called the Way of Blood, that trip, because it was a hot spot for thieves. The story continues in verse 31, where a priest came along. But when he saw the man lying there, he crossed to the other side of the road and passed him by. A Levite also does the same thing, or a temple assistant. Like, right, I thought these were meant to be the good guys, right? The priest, the Levite. And it's super easy for, like, you and me, living 2,000 years, you know, later, on the other side of the world, to look down on, like, the priest and the Levite. But let's give you some more context, because if you know me, I love context. So these priests and Levites were actually like temple workers in Jerusalem. Most of them resided about 30 kilometers away in Jericho. They followed a two-week schedule, working at the temple, then heading home with their payment. And guess what? Like, their payment wasn't like some digital numbers in a bank account or like cash from the temple. No, it was, they were actually paid in the form of tithes. So, it was like not cash. It was, the currency was food. So it would be animal or grain offerings. If you're like really nerdy, you can read Leviticus 21 through to 23 in your spare time. But that, basically, that's all about food, sanitation, and what we now refer to as a kosher diet, right? So long story short, if any of their food came into contact with something or someone considered unclean, like the guy bleeding out on the side of the road, they would have to toss out all that food. Picture yourself as the priest or the Levite, completely exhausted after like a two-week-long shift, the only way home, navigating a treacherous road with one goal in mind, to reach your destination as quickly as possible. Suddenly you spot another helpless victim on the roadside. Realistically, they seem, you know, beyond saving. If you were to like stop and help, it would likely mean sacrificing all the food you have left for your family. Deep down, you know it's like morally wrong, but you can't deny like the gravitational pull to ignore what you saw. Just keep looking forward. You didn't see anything. Like, now is not the time for you to be a person of love. Appreciate your honesty, everyone. But then the Samaritan comes along and tends to like the needs of the Jewish man. He takes action, pours out this unexpected love for another. So there was like this long-standing racial tension that was like centuries old between the Samaritans of the north and the Jews of the south. So just for some more context, there's 12 tribes that make up Israel. So 10 in the north, 2 in the south. When the 10 in the north were like dragged away into exile by Assyria, a few of them were left in the north. And the Assyrians, they imported women to like intermarry with the survivors who were left. And so the survivors did exactly that. And their descendants were known as Samaritans, half Jew and half Assyrian. Fast forward a couple hundred years, the two southern tribes got taken away to Babylon, but they flat out refused to intermarry with anyone there. Can you imagine how they felt about their northern cousins? Those guys didn't stay pure and they chose to create like a bastardized race, right? This led to like continuous disagreements and fights between the groups as the years went on. So the Jews thought Samaritans were total heretics. And the Samaritans, well, they saw the Jews as like racist bigots. They despised each other. And guess who Jesus picks as the hero of his story for the Jewish people? Yeah, it's a Samaritan. It's the enemy. Notice in verse 37, the expert replies to Jesus' question of who was a neighbor by saying, the one who showed him mercy. He can't even say the man's name or even say the word Samaritan. I imagine his response was like given behind gritted teeth. Yet Jesus goes and tells him to do the same as the Samaritan. Who do you think you're more like? The priest and the Levite or the Samaritan? Do you find yourself choosing to give in to selfishness more often than you'd like? Are you more concerned about the things that only affect you? Or do you actively come alongside others in like relational love? Do you put others ahead of yourself? Would you call yourself a person of love? Then, no matter where you're at, the good news is that there are steps that we can take to become people of love. And funnily enough, a big part of that is by becoming people of action. Have you ever had to do something that you were afraid to do? Of course you have, right? I'm still afraid to get up here and talk to all of you, and this is my eighth time doing this, right? Everyone at some point has something that they're scared of. That's actually a good thing. It's good because these experiences, they teach us important lessons about being human and about our life with God. I think sometimes we stop taking Jesus' invitation to live like risky, courageous lives. We stop trying to do the things Jesus calls us to do because they seem a bit scary. And showing love can be scary because love is relational. We're forced to step out of our comfort zones and meet people where they're at. And sometimes that's not where we're at, is it? Imagine if we read the parable of the Good Samaritan with like slightly different characters, right? A Christian was walking down the road from Jerusalem to Jericho, and she fell among thieves. And still another follower of Jesus passed on by, but a Muslim came and stopped and helped her. Imagine that. It could be a young person of color who's hurt and a police officer who helps him. Imagine that. An Israeli is wounded and a Palestinian helps. An Australian citizen and an asylum seeker. A Russian and a Ukrainian. Whatever our borders, whatever our divisions, imagine if we acted like the Samaritan in love. I remember when we first started taking Job, he's my oldest son, he's three, to swimming lessons. For him, it was like initially a really terrifying experience. There was a lot of explaining, hand-holding, and encouragement that went into preparing him and working through that first experience. Getting into the water, and during the lesson, there were many tears and uncertainties. And fair enough too, right? It's a new experience. But by the end of the lesson, Job seemed to almost be enjoying the whole experience. And the next time we went, he was looking forward to getting into the water. The more we become people of action, the easier it becomes. The more we participate in acting out as people of love, the more we'll be training ourselves to see the world as a place where we can act creatively for and with God. I think the issue that the expert of the law had when approaching Jesus was that his heart was closed off to loving God. Like, religion was a checklist of tasks to complete, ticking off boxes to meet his KPIs for the day. And when our hearts are closed off to loving God, it makes it even harder to open our hearts to loving others. Has anyone tried to snorkel before? Yeah, a few of you? Great. When Beck and I were on our honeymoon, we were snorkeling in Hanauma Bay in Hawaii. And using a snorkel can be pretty tricky, you know? Like, you have to figure out how to keep it upright and swim in a way that keeps the top above water. And that wasn't easy with, you know, my gigantic head and flat nose meant that the thing was never sealed to my face properly. But here's the cool part. Like, when water does get in the top, right, which always happens, you get to do that fun thing where you spit it out. You just shoot that water right up the top, right? Boo! Like a little, like a whale. And, like, it's kind of fun. And it serves a purpose, too. You have to get rid of all that water before you can take your next breath, because the snorkel is basically a tube. And the air you breathe in and goes out, breathe in and out, goes through the same tube. So if the top of the snorkel is blocked by water, you can't breathe in or out. And the same idea applies to love. Love flows from our hearts. But our hearts, like snorkels, work in both directions. Love flows in and out through the same tube. That's why Jesus teaches that loving God and loving others are connected. If we're open to loving others, our hearts are open to receiving love from God. And when our hearts are receptive to God's love, we're able to share love to our neighbors. But maintaining that state, it's not easy, right? When we experience hurt or like betrayal or rejection, our natural instinct is to close off our hearts to love. We think that by, you know, shutting everyone out, we can avoid pain. The problem is, it's like locking the snorkel. When we shut ourselves off from loving others, we also cut ourselves off from being open to God's love. That's why many of us, you know, we might end up feeling empty and lost in life and faith. Our pain and desire to protect ourselves prevent us from tapping into the source of true life. The religious scholar definitely had his snorkel closed. What about you? Is your snorkel open or closed to the amazing love of God? Will you take the risk of opening your heart or your snorkel to being loved by God? It's a really funny word, snorkel. Like, anyway. I think it's helpful, like particularly for like in a room like this, to have a level of respect and like compassion and awareness that we don't all start from or are at the same place. Like, we don't all come from the same family of origin. We don't all have the same personality type. We don't all have the same life experience. We don't have the same genetic code. And that's not an excuse, that's just reality. But all of us have potential to grow and mature and become people of love. But we have to experience the love of God. And I love that there's so much love in this church. You might be sitting here thinking, well, this is all well and good, right? But what can I practically do today, in our context, right here and now, in order to become more like a person of love? How can we come alongside others as people of love or people of action? Like the Samaritan, we can emulate the same mindset. We've got to open our eyes to those who need help. Like bridging the barriers that we put up through, you know, our own lenses, because we all have our own filters. Maybe we won't come across someone bleeding on the side of the road during our morning commute, but there are people everywhere who are hurting emotionally, relationally, spiritually. They might not show it physically, but they're suffering. If we could see our neighborhood or any neighborhood through God's eyes, like with superpowers, right? We'd see loads of people hiding away in their rooms, apartments and homes. They're lonely, they're hurting, and desperate for the love of the Father. Do you know anyone who might fit into these categories? Who are the people around you who are in need? Oh, yeah, feel free to share who that might be with your phone as well. Some of you might not be aware, but within our community here at Moody Ponds, we have a new migrants group. This is a group whose mission is to come alongside people and uplift and support others wherever they might be at, be it helping to find employment, sharing a meal together, connecting people with resources. Maybe it's prayer for their situation, or even simply making them feel welcome here in community. Imagine what our world would look like if we were all focused on being people of love. Imagine how infectiously present God's love would be in our communities. Imagine the deep and beautiful connections and relationships we could foster with one another if we came at it from a posture of love. Some good answers there. Excellent. So let me throw it back out to you, and maybe we can encourage one another. What things are you doing or have done right now to love your neighbor, to love the other? So we're going to pull up to this next mentee in a sec. And remember, this is completely anonymous, so none of you, so if you feel like what you're sharing might be construed as bragging, no one will know it's you except God and your own conscience. But, you know, have you showed up to a friend who was moving house? Have you been an ear for someone who needed to be heard? Have you found yourself giving material possessions to others who might need it more than you? Have you encouraged someone lately? Have you been a friend to someone who was lonely? Have you simply prayed a prayer for people in need and lifted their situation to God? Oh, could you press enter, Ewan? Thank you. Oh, gifts to new neighbors. Invited someone for a meal. Awesome. Amazing. Giving food, talking, being present, visiting them. Notice how every single one of these is an action. Every single one of these is relational. Walk their dogs. Amazing. Great. And these are all things that we can all practically do ourselves as well, too. Great. Amazing. So I want to challenge you all in this next week. Are you guys up for a challenge? And you're like, oh, I'll wait till you say what the challenge is before accepting that. So in order to take a step towards becoming more like a person of love, I want you all to think of two people you will bless this week through loving actions, okay? If you'd like the hard mode version of it, if you want to up the difficulty, make one person someone in your faith community and one person someone outside of your faith community, okay? So this week, love them through words of encouragement, acts of kindness and generosity, and uplift them in prayer over this period. Can you guys do that? Yeah? Can you be intentional to two people this week? Yeah? As I close up and invite the band back up, we read in 1 John 3:17 to 18, if anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? Dear children, let us not love with words or speech, but with actions and in truth. When we think about being a person of love, it's a call for all of us in our local communities to come alongside others. It's not just about recognizing the God who is already active in our community, but also about a generous invitation from God to join him in mission. Being a person of love is a privilege, where we get to walk alongside people, understand their hearts and their needs, and like be the serving hands as the hands and feet of Jesus right beside them, right? Like Jesus sets the example of a life-transforming, all-powerful, loving, and gracious embodiment of God's heart, showing us how to put love into action. Let's not just talk about love. Let's practice real love. We are called to be people of love, so we must be people of action. Thank you. Talking about love is easy. We can engage in discussions about love without getting too involved. We can maintain our distance, detach from the actual practice. We can stay within our comfort zones with no risk or cost involved. It's a safe approach, keeping our hands clean and avoiding any real engagement. However, that's not what Jesus calls us to do. We're called to a different kind of love. It's the love of Christ that urges us to come alongside others, to model this love to them. It requires seeing the needs of others and actively serving them. It calls for countercultural lifestyle, moving away from the self-centered allure of me first, consumerism, materialism, and comfort. Instead, our focus shifts to others as we wholeheartedly love them sacrificially. Love is a doing word. In order to be people of love, we're called to step out of our comfort zones and walk alongside those in need. Let me close in prayer. Lord, open our hearts to our neighbors. May they become our friends. Open our lives to strangers, immigrants, and those we don't yet know. Help us show welcome and embrace. Open our tables so they become places of friendship, community, and love. Open our homes and our finances so they bless others and express generosity. Open our mouths to bless, affirm, and honor others. Let us live lives that affirm and honor others, building them up. Give us the grace to be open, welcoming, affirming, and generous. Enable us to be people of love, people of action. Amen.